Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. And instead, simply go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI on Unlimited Ultimate and a watch or tab, also on them.
Service plan required for watch or tab. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health. A world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and we're here for part two of our discussion about the defense from that big win over Tampa Bay. If you didn't listen to part one, joined by Josh Reed here of the Anchorage Daily News. Correct, Josh?
Yes, sir.
And great discussion about a lot of topics in the Ravens, a lot of the problems in the secondary we talked about. There's some talk about the four interior defensive linemen in a game where we really noticed its impact in that fourth quarter again. A lot of talk about changes that the team has had to make and what they might do prospectively with Arthur Maulet. Some looks at packages and some looks at the opportunity sets the Ravens are giving up and how probably some portion of the Ravens' issue right now is pressure, but it's relatively small compared to how they're playing for individual pressure opportunities. So there's a lot of information there. And if you prefer to get in a written form, that's also out on the website in my defensive article this week. But in the second half, want to start off, Josh, talking about the way the game ended, all right? Because let's set the stage here a little bit, because the Ravens were up 17 even after Tampa Bay scored with 3:49 to play. So naturally, at that point, you line up to go for a two-point conversion, hoping to cut the lead to 15, keep it a two-score game, okay? And They did exactly that. Pierce blasts through the middle for that very wonderful sack of Mayfield. Doesn't count as a sack, but boy, was it nice. It was the only contribution the interior defensive line made in that fourth quarter. But that kept it a 17-point game. At that point, how would you have prudently handled the game from that point? Were you in Todd Bowles' shoes? And I see we just lost Josh as soon as I ask him that question. But I'm going to set the stage even further, and I'm going to take you back to the Buffalo game in week four. Because at that point, 7:17 to go, the Ravens had a 35-10 lead. A little bit different situation, but not too much difference in a relative sense. 25 points with 7:17 to go as opposed to 17 points with 3 minutes and change to go. Okay, so in that Buffalo game, it's almost as if John Harbaugh got on the intercoach channel of his headset and said to McDermott, "Hi there, let's agree to end this game now. I'll run the ball, you run the ball, we'll get the game over with." And that's essentially exactly what happened in that Buffalo game. So they ran over the last 7 minutes and 17 seconds. Both teams combined ran only 11 plays for over 7 minutes of football. They were obviously trying to run out the clock. Both teams were. It was an enormous game in terms of implications for seeding in the AFC. The Ravens and Bills could very well finish with the same record, and this tiebreaker could determine who plays at home and who gets maybe the two seed and the three seed, possibly even the one seed and the two seed could be determined that. But definitely the two seed and the three seed. Two seed's a lot better than the three seed, by the way. You play two home games, and the second one would be the not going to Buffalo game if you're looking at it from the Ravens' perspective. It's a potentially enormous advantage. So it was interesting that even in a game of that magnitude, McDermott is smart enough to know and is experienced enough to know we're better off not taking a risk of injury here, not keeping Josh Allen out there. Josh Allen was getting hounded in that game, and just moving on and trying to close this game out at the current score. So anyway, they did exactly that. Again, 11 plays in 7 minutes and 17 seconds. Fast forward again to this Tampa Bay game, and you'll see that okay, let's see. He's got dropped somehow. Not sure why that happened. But we're gonna hope to get him back on the line, solve this technical issue for a second. But I'll say the Tampa Bay game doesn't have nearly the playoff implications. It's an interconference game, which means it's at the very bottom end of value in terms of any tiebreakers. You want to win your divisional games, you want to win your head-to-head games, then you want to win your divisional games, then you want to win your conference games, and then you want to win any game. And this is in the any game category. They're down 17. At that point. So the first thing is you kick the ball on sides. Now, I guess I don't have an enormous problem with it, but I think the easier path to finishing the game is to kick the ball off to the Ravens, allow them to run the ball probably 3 times directly into the middle of the line, because that's what they did with Justice Hill a little bit later. And I'm going to send him a new link here just to make sure we can get this done again. And hopefully, I'm not sure exactly what's preventing him from being on there, but maybe a problem. If I have to do the show solo, I will, folks. But anyway, the point is that Todd Bowles, for whatever reason, thought it was a good idea to continue playing hard. There were inherent problems with that. You know, you have the risk of players getting hurt. That ended up, unfortunately, being realized with the Godwin injury. And maybe more importantly than that, on the game's final play, Baker Mayfield ran the ball 12 yards and didn't slide. And all I can say is Kyle Hamilton is very merciful, much more merciful than he was with Kate Otten early in the game, and just tackled him softly to finish the game and patted him on the helmet, and that was that. But, there, you know, in a 10-point ball game, why on earth would your quarterback, you know, rush for, why would he run at all? And then why would he run 12 yards and not slide at the end of a game like that? I cannot put the pieces together. They passed the ball, I think, 5 times more after Godwin's injury. And the minutes they had to contemplate what had just occurred. None of that really made any sense to me. It was not a well-coached moment. And, you know, there are times when I say, let's really revel in who John Harbaugh is, because you can always pick out minuscule things in game management for any coach, by the way. But for Harbaugh, it certainly can be done, where he makes some mistake, fails to call a timeout before the fair catch to make sure that you know, Flowers doesn't make it last year, calls a double timeout, does something to not make sure that Lamar knows to not run a play before the 2-minute warning. But all those kind of things have occurred, and occasionally they might cost you a play, maybe even occasionally a game. But if you look at the total value of all those quote unquote mistakes that Harbaugh made, it's not very much, and it's nothing compared to something like this. This is, to me, this is a capital offense for Todd Bowles. He should probably be fired for something like this occurring on his watch.
Oh man, I mean, at a certain point, you're like, dude, you know, this is a non-conference game. You know, you're already down by several scores, and you're lost Mike Evans for the rest of the game to a hamstring. He wasn't supposed to be in that game to begin with, but he ended up catching a touchdown, and it's just. I understand maybe a little bit more if it was a divisional game. Got to have a divisional game, and you're kind of like, you know, towards the end of the season. But we're in week six, week seven, and it's a non-conference game. Like you got to kind of learn to live to fight another day. And I know that, you know, as a former player and somebody who's around sports all the time, that it's easier said than done. You know, you never want to wave a white flag, especially like, hey, we already recovered one onside kick. Maybe we could get another one. You know, you still have that warrior-like mentality, but at the same time, you kind of got to weigh the pros and the cons of the situation. Non-conference game. we're already down by several scores. The likelihood of us being able to stop them, like, they're lucky that Lamar was pulled from the game. And the Ravens did the smart thing and put Josh Johnson in the game, even though he went 3-and-out. Who gives a crap? We're not risking our franchise for this non-conference game that we're already up big in. And you kind of think that the head coach of Todd Bowles' experience, this isn't his first rodeo. Been head coach before at the Jets. He's been at coaching in the NFL for 3+ decades, would have the wherewithal to, you know, kind of like, you know, it's not worth the squeeze in this. You know, like, we're down several scores with like a few minutes to play. Even if we were to get the ball back miraculously for the, you know, third straight time, you know, the odds of us still, there's no such thing as a 15 point play. So I didn't think the juice was worth the squeeze in that. And it really ended up costing them their receivers. I mean, Mike Evans went out much earlier in the game, but, you know, people want to back on Roquan for the tackle. Well, why are we even in this position? You know, why are you still trying to throw the ball over the middle of the field, you know, into traffic like that, putting your best receiver in harm's way in the waning minutes of the game? So you can't blame Roquan for making a routine tackle that's trying to get a guy down. Don't have your guys in that position. And then the Bucs only had a few receivers after Evans went down. I think they were down like 4, but I don't care if you got to do 2 tight end sets. I'm not risking my franchise, whether it be Chris Godwin or Baker Mayfield, for a losing fight.
Yeah, the Ravens gave them every possible signal. I'm getting some background noise from you, Josh, so please be careful with your microphone and any kind of banging on the table I think I just heard. But the Ravens gave them every kind of signal that they would need. They, first of all, they ran the ball into the line 3 times with Justice Hill between the tackles. Gained, I think, 1 total yard, or maybe it was 0 total yards in 3 attempts. But in any case, it was making it clear that, hey, we're not trying to run up the score on you. This is a good time for you to wave the white flag. They on in terms of pass rush, they showed them 10 4-0 pass rushes, 1-3-0 pass rush. They had 1 6-man pass rush and 1 other 5-2 where they sent Ardarius Washington on the blitz for a sack. But otherwise, they gave him the clearest possible signals that they didn't want to get anybody hurt. I mean, those are how coaches communicate with each other, is on these kind of vanilla play calls. And Bowles did not pick up on it. And somebody's got to be on that headset asking the question, hey, is this a good time to maybe, you know, slow this down, you know, run between the tackles, pull Baker, tell the new quarterback, whoever goes in, hey, look, this is your job. You hand off the football and you run him right into the line. It was horribly done. And to me, Bowles probably should be fired for it.
I've heard a lot of people in the media come to his defense, mostly former players, right? But like, you know, you gotta remove yourself from that from a player perspective, right? You gotta just be practical about this. I said a non-conference, interconference, this game couldn't mean any more or less to you guys in the grand scheme of things, and you're laying it all on the line in a game that you're already down several scores. The juice is not worth the squeeze.
Yeah, absolutely. And that is really what it comes down to, is relativizing the risk and reward in this case. And it just did a terrible job. You can't think Pollyanna like optimistically when your responsibility is to get your team through a football season in the best possible shape. Because your goal is to win the most games on the season. It's not to win that game tonight exclusively. And the fact that they gave up, would have maybe given up 0.003 wins by waving the right flag and taking no risk in terms of injuries, is about as obvious a decision as I can make. It would have been an order of magnitude different in terms of their likelihood of an injury being much higher than their chance of winning that football game, even if they played all out to do it all the way. I guess another problem I have is
sometimes you just gotta lick your wounds. Hey, tonight wasn't our night. We thought we had this one, and you know, we clearly don't. Let's just live to fight another day. And it's just, I don't know if it was hubris or arrogance or whatever you want to call it, but it wasn't worth potentially derailing your season. And now you gotta Baker Mayfield. You gotta have try to Baker Mayfield with the ghost of Sterling Shepard and Jaquan McMillan and Jalen McMillan and Trey Palmer, and I don't know. Kate, poor Kate Otten. Kate Otten, who should probably be in a full body cast at this point.
He's not going to last the season if he takes hits like that. And they gave him a good pounding in that game. But Todd Bowles may or may not make it through the season. I think Tampa Bay's got an excellent chance to backdoor their way into the playoffs. But it didn't get any better with the fact that Godwin went down, and they probably have just about eliminated any of their chances to make the Super Bowl based on that injury. And we'll see how it plays out for them from here. All right, let's talk some individual players. Josh, who would you like to talk about?
Dafa Owe, he's a guy who, I said, you know, he got recorded his first sack in three games, and you know, his third down sack. But more important than that was because that was, you know, a big play, that holding call he drew on Tristan Wirfs, yeah, that negated a touchdown. I mean, that was like instead of the Buccaneers going up 14 donut on the Ravens, you know, they end up holding to a field goal, and now the Ravens only have a 10-point hole instead of a 14-point hole. As cool as the sack was, you know, the short sack and get off the field, literally taking 4 points off the board for the opposing team. You gotta give him credit for that.
Yeah, it was an outstanding critical play. He did a good job, I thought, of selling it. And Wirfs did have his hand on him, and he jiggled both sides to try and get free, which is what you need to do. Then usually throw your arms up, and I think he did that as well. But anyway, good. It was a good performance there as well by Owe in terms of making sure he got it. It's what offensive linemen try and do. They try and go for the armpit and hold on there. And Wirfs had both of them grabbed very tightly. He probably overplayed his block a little bit, but it's so difficult to get locked in against a quality pass rusher at that point that I think most offensive linemen are loath to give it away. Ben Powers told me he was always go for the V of the neck with his left arm, that was one of the key points he wanted to do on a great pass block. And you know, as long as it's inside, it usually won't call any kind of a hold on you. You gotta go. The player has to get outside of your frame to then make that effective, and Powers is very good at not letting that happen. So he was effective at it. To me, Wirfs is a great, great player. To draw a hold on that guy who hasn't had a holding penalty in forever, really a great outcome for OA. All right, I'll pick a player. Let's talk about Wiggins. All right, I thought Wiggins had his best game as a pro by a mile. He was on the football in terms of touching it at least three times, though he was only credited with two PDs. So he got the one PD from behind on a if Palmer's, I think it was Palmer, right? His hand wasn't there. It could have been an interception. It was on a slant pass over the right side. And then he had his hands on the ball and almost scooped it by the right sideline, but again, somehow it went through those hands of his, which haven't been great this year, obviously. But those are going to turn into interceptions. I am loving his ability to get his hands on the football. It's just huge. He was targeted five times in this game, zero receptions, got bailed out a little bit by the overthrow in the end zone to McMillan right by the right pylon. So it went over just out of bounds. Both feet were out for McMillan. But you know what? Baker Mayfield probably saw Wiggins there and said, I don't want to throw an interception. I'm going to lay it out here in the absolute point where it's my guy or no guy. And that usually means it's a much higher percentage chance of it being no guy.
Yeah, I love it. Wiggins is really rounding in the shape, man, for this team. And I feel like he's going to be a bona fide starter. You know, I mean, he's already started most games, just given that Humphrey Buck inside whenever teams run trips or any more receivers. Yeah, he's really playing with more discipline, more composure. You know, like, he's still a little grabby, but he's not as grabby as he was in that Cowboys game, right? And he's a guy that's really rounding into shape. And you know, like, Marlon struggled with corralling picks early on in his career too, and now the guy leads the team with four. Honestly, I think that I don't know this for sure, but when Marlon's second pick, I think had he trusted Nate to maybe come down with the ball, he wouldn't have like had to attack it as aggressively as he did. But he was like, no, I can't leave this up to the rook. We need this pick. And then he ended up, you know, they pretty much ended up colliding and then coming down at the same time. But you know, like you kind of don't want to leave it up to chance there. And Nate has shown the propensity to, yeah, he gets his hand on balls, but he doesn't just corral them all the time. But I think he's gonna start turning that corner. I think he's gonna get at least one or two picks before the end of the season, and I'm really excited for his development. Already looked like a great pick for Eric DaCosta.
Yeah, it really does. And he's gonna get his chance, I think, right away to play basically every down. If Humphrey is out for even a game, obviously he's gonna play every snap. They really don't have anybody else on the outside. TJ Tampa is their next man down, next man up. You know, okay, let's call it the right thing, is the next man up. And after that, they might have a practice squad corner they're talking about elevating for the game. They had Kadar Holman, so I'm not even sure who it would be now. I don't think that they're at a point where
Bump Cooper, right?
Yeah. That's like actually exciting.
I liked him in the preseason. So he probably might be the next guy up. You know, that, you know, if Humphrey does, he'll probably be the first guy on a practice squad called up if Humphrey does miss this Cleveland game.
Yeah, no, that's a very good point. Now I'm all kinds of, see, I knew it was great having you on the show here, because now I'm all kinds of excited about that. Cooper was one of the real stars of the preseason, and very good player. All right. Now I got a big smile on my face. It's a happy day again, thinking about Bump Cooper. Who else would you like to talk about?
We already talked about Humphrey pretty extensively. We can talk about Roquan a little bit. I know a lot of people are kind of, you know, bagging on for the Chris Godwin injury thing, which is, like, it was kind of a bang bang play. Can't really control that. But you know, just like some of the, he ended up finishing with like 18 tackles, and a lot of people want to bag on him for the miscommunication. They end up with running backs running out in the flat. But I mean, the guy can't be everywhere at once, right? You know, like if he's mugged up in the A gap, and you know they have a one of those blitz beaters built into the plays of contingency, you can't really blame that on him. But I mean, there were several points in here where he's making big hits, big tackles, forced a fumble. I think it was a big hit on Otten or somebody over the middle that I think was Otten that he ended up recovering. But Roquan's everywhere, man. And then he had the big stop, you know, pretty much the sack, but the plus one we were talking about earlier with Madubuike, they ended up forcing a long field goal that they missed. And then later on in the same half, he drew the face mask on Baker Mayfield, Mr. think he's more athletic than he is, on the scramble, and then on ended up forcing him, I think, to like a third and long, and I think that was the play where KVN had the sack. So I mean, just creating those negative plays on those tackles, and that's 2 weeks in a row where our opposing quarterback thought that they were going to beat Roquan to the edge and end up paying for it.
So 18 tackles in this game without a miss. Now Roquan, since week two, he had a missed tackle that I charted at in the third quarter at like 13:32 or something. If you want to go back and look at the thing, he hasn't missed a tackle since. It's at least 59 consecutive tackle contributions in the meantime. We haven't had a Ravens player to have that kind of streak in a long time. I don't even know who it might be. I know Patrick Queen had one that was up around 30 tackles, which was really special, but I don't think there's been anybody else who's had a streak nearly as long. So, or nearly as long as 59 anyway. But the outrageous game, and he is at the heart and soul of the Ravens, not missing tackles as a team. I think he demands it out of other players as well. And I agree with your comments completely about being reasonable and managing your expectations in coverage in two dimensions. The first is that he'll always be a player that the better opposing quarterbacks are going to try and pick on because he's a little slower than the other guys on the field, particularly when you're in dime. Hamilton is the other inside player there. Now, the other thing is, if you're going to play a guy way up in the A-gap, you can't expect him to get to the sideline. The Ravens have done that back to the days of Pease when they had the 4th-and-12 play that lost them the game against Cincinnati that we shall never speak of again in 2017. They started off with C.J. Mosley in the A-gap and tried to drop him to drag the seam against Tyler Boyd. Terrible play.
He was,
yeah.
Yep. Yeah. He was just outstretched, and he just couldn't get back there, couldn't get deep enough, fast enough. But why are you asking that of your? I don't want to say plotting, because he's not plotting, but like, why are you asking that of your inside linebacker? You know, in a situation like that, over a slot receiver, that's just you're asking for you're leaving the door open for the worst possible outcome.
Yeah, and it was incredible that happens that year. And there were other players who didn't quite get their job done on that play. It was a complex design, though, for a game-ending play. And you got 4th and 12. How about you stick with the basics? You know, even if they got in the first down, they weren't necessarily going to score and beat the Ravens. But they had a good chance to get off the field there, and it wasn't ideal. But the very next year, C.J. Mosley is in the last play of the season defensively again and comes up with the interception on 4th and 10 to seal the AFC North for the Ravens and send all the Steelers into the locker room as they're watching the game on their jumbo vision there. Great moment in Ravens.
Yeah. That was sweet. That was sweet.
All right. All right. So great game out of Roquan there. And it's really nice, but I think he's on an all-pro track again. So I think that's something we can look forward to. All right. Let's talk a little bit about Kyle Hamilton, another guy who was all over the field. I talked about this a little bit in the first episode, but I thought there were three separate times where Kyle Hamilton made an ankle tackle that looked like it was going to be a very substantial either yak or run for additional yards. And those are very difficult tackles to make, but Kyle Hamilton is exceptionally good at grabbing onto ankles and holding on.
Yeah. I mean, like Kyle Hamilton, man, you know, as much as Roquan is the heart and soul of the defense from an emotional standpoint, I mean, Kyle Hamilton, I mean, he's the one that makes it go, man. I mean, the guy plays with the mentality of a middle linebacker, but has the range of a safety, and just like the way he comes down. I mean, the dude's the screen killer, the swing pass killer, the anything underneath killer. I mean, you try to put any of that stuff on Kyle Hamilton, and like not just he doesn't just blow things up sometimes. Like he knows that second level that, you know, the offensive lineman kind of try to climb up to him and try to take him out. The dude's great at avoiding and shedding blocks too. I mean, like the way he can get under linemen sometimes can make them completely whiff and cut down a receiver or a running back or even a quarterback sometimes before they can get going. I mean, the dude is phenomenal out there on the edge or wherever he's lined up on any given play.
Okay. The play I want to also point people to is at the end of the first quarter. It's a Q1 137. Godwin was on him trying to block him, but he made an ankle tackle of White on a pass right. It was a screen pass to the right for 2 yards. Already the entire picket fence had been set up by Tampa Bay. They had 7 blockers in front of the play. Can you even imagine? I mean, it's hard to do that. It's hard to have 7 players out in front of a screen pass, but they had all the numbers on that side of the field. Kyle Hamilton knifed through traffic, made the ankle tackle, took him down. It was probably a 7-on-4 or 5 situation on that side of the field, which some begs the question how they put themselves in that position. But some of it is the pass rush, and it was a question of it was Hamilton or it was probably a touchdown, and Hamilton took him down for just a 2-yard gain on that play. And I think that was the one that ended with them ending up only with a field goal on the drive. So, it was 3 plays later. They had four plays later, they had to settle for a field goal, after they, didn't punch it in from 3rd and 18.
Yeah.
All right. I think I picked Hamilton. Any other players you want to talk about?
We can talk about we are talking about Michael Pierce a little bit. Who is another guy that Ardarius Washington? He's a guy that I really want to see get more playing time. You know, no matter what kind of form that takes, whether it's playing more safety, playing more nickel, whether Marlins, you know, still healthier and Mollett's back or not, he's a guy that I feel like earned the right to now. People want to bag on him for the drop picks, and had he got that one that slipped through his hands, you know, that takes takes another touchdown drive off of the scoreboard for the Bucks. But the fact that this guy is in the right places at the right time to make these plays, I think can't go overstated enough. Yes, he needs to corral those picks. Yes, he needs to finish those plays. But the fact that this guy is still making plays on the ball, in the position to make plays on the ball, and he's a great open field tackler as well. I mean, he's a guy that I definitely want to see him on the field more so than Eddie Jackson. And I think he's going to be in a regular rotation with Marlett in the slot if Humphrey can't go.
Yeah, I would guess he's going to be in more of a segmented play with
Didn't you know it's possible to get THC shipped right to your door? Mood delivers premium 100% federally legal THC directly to you. I'm talking about delicious high potency gummies, top shelf flower, home-baked cookies, vapes, anything you'd find at a dispensary, you can now order online and have it shipped quickly, discreetly, and conveniently right to your door. And every Mood product is made from pesticide-free cannabis grown on America's best small farms at prices that won't destroy your wallet. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code Ravens. So head to mood.com/Ravens, check out their online dispensary, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code Ravens when you check out to save 20% on your first order.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. And instead, simply go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI on Unlimited Ultimate and a watch or tap, also on them.
Service plan required for watch or tap. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
Access big savings every day, all in the Kroger app.
Get tender Heritage Farm boneless chicken breast for $2.49 a pound. Then find low prices on thousands of items like sparkling ice water, Kroger brand chips, and more, all with your card.
Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
With Jackson on the back end, I think they trust him more on the split field role than what Jackson has provided so far. So I think that makes more sense.
Yeah.
The fact that he's in position.
No matter what form it takes, I'd rather see him on the field. No matter what form it takes, I'd rather see him on the field more than Jackson.
Well, and a week ago, they changed the dime to use him in the dime on the back end. But this week, when Humphrey got hurt, they had to move him back to the slot because they didn't have another option there. So you have Wiggins and Stevens on either side, but you had to have Vardarius back in the slot. I think if it weren't for that, they'd have stayed with more of him in that dime package, which was most of what they played in the second half. So it would have been a little bit different of a look for the Ravens, and hopefully Ardarius would have been in a position to make a play. He was in a position to make a play and didn't do it in this game, of course. He also allowed a touchdown. It wasn't a perfect game for Ardarius. It might have been his worst game of the year, but he's been a hell of a playmaker. And if your worst game of the year, you have a really nice sack like he did, I'm okay with that.
Yeah. I mean, you win some and you lose some, but you live to fight another day.
All right. I want to go on to talk about one more player, and that's Tavius Robinson. A fine game from Robinson in a lot of ways. And he sometimes he's just in there and he seems like tofu, but he fulfilled multiple responsibilities in this game. He played the edge, I thought, pretty well. He kicked inside on some rush dime that we talked about in the package segment in the first show, if you want to go back and listen to that. And he's the one who also lost a play. Yes, he
the sack on the hold.
The sack negated on the holding call on the back end. Didn't have anything to do with him, obviously. It was on Stevens, but yeah, that was a shame.
Yeah. Davis is definitely a guy who he's really one of the glue guys for the Ravens in the front seven. He does a lot of dirty work, and when you see those dirty work guys get rewarded with a sack, you know, whether it's a hustle sack or a scheme depth sack, you hate to see those negated because it's something that somebody did in the back end that had no effect on the play whatsoever. Davis is a guy that a lot of people just peg as an early down defender exclusively, but I feel like he can do more in this defense if given the chance.
Yeah, no, I do too, and I think his play is important because rotationally they need to make sure Owe and Van Noy are not overworked. You know, and Ngakoue is a help in that respect, but they really also need to make sure those guys aren't on for every first down. Now with Harrison out, that's a player who can take that Sam responsibility away from Van Noy, so they're kind of a little short. And Tavius Robinson taking additional snaps, whether it's Russ or Sam's side, can only help the defense in terms of filling out their snap count at an important rotational position where you need to stay fresh.
Agreed.
All right. Any other players you want to talk about? We've got a mailbag we can look at. If not, what would you like to do?
Yeah, we can move on to mailbag. I'm ready to move on.
All right, let's do it. We got some good questions this time in the mailbag, and let's go through them here. So the first one I'm going to go to is from A Bits, who says, with Roquan struggling in the positions he's put in, i.e. simulating blitz at the line of scrimmage and then dropping to cover, do you think the addition of Mollett will help in terms of his ability to blitz and less of, I think he's talking about Mollett's ability to blitz, and less of a need to put linebackers in disadvantageous positions? By the way, great, great question, Abitz. He's at Bolt_Bost, B-O-S-T. I would think he's a pretty good follow, a guy to, if you want to communicate with, to be a good guy to talk football with. But I think you're probably hitting on something here. The less they can put, if they can find ways to put Roquan less all the way in the A-gap, I think it'll be more effective. I think I talked about earlier about liking the way Tampa Bay does it, where they line their simulated blitzers off about a yard and a half to 2 yards off the line of scrimmage, which I think gives them more ability to not only respond to coverage needs or to flow back to whatever the coverage responsibility is, but also to choose a gap as pass rushers.
Yeah. When I was in high school, there's this team, they would play this thing called an amoeba defense, to where like the linebackers and some, not even defensive linemen, would never have their hands in the dirt, right? Because like they just walk around, you wouldn't know who's coming from where. And it was confusing as hell as an offensive lineman and as a fullback sometimes. You didn't know who's coming to win and what they were going to do. You know, you could have the guy who's lined up in the C gap coming all the way around, looping around to the A gap. So you never really know. And like, I like giving those, especially off ball players, that kind of freedom to kind of pick and choose, you know, a la Michael Parsons or, you know, even a Miles Garrett sometimes, where they kind of just kind of play eeny, miny, moe and kind of pick their spots. And you kind of just don't want to pigeonhole somebody into just being the double A gap, you know, a mugged up blitz thing, just because, like we saw against the Bucks, you know, like teams can, they can have beaters for that. They can have contingencies for that. If you're not going to come, and even if you are going to come, you know, like, whoa, I'll have that outlet. Either way, the running back's going to be out in the flat, not accounted for either way. So I don't know about Mala in particular having more of an effect. I just think using Roquan differently and not putting him in disadvantageous positions would help him, you know, as far as like, you know, not being out of place for some of those. Because it seems like a lot of times he's the guy that's kind of trailing, like, oh, God damn it. You know, we let one loose at the back door.
Yeah. It's a much harder problem to solve than people ever give credit for. But Roquan has got an unenviable position in two ways. The first is that he ends up often being the slow guy that opposing quarterbacks will want to take advantage of in the middle of the field. The second is that he's a guy who naturally has to take the responsibilities that the other guy can't do. So last year, Patrick Queen, still not a great coverage player, Roquan gets some of those coverage responsibilities because Patrick Queen can help you a little bit as a pass rusher. It's not necessarily you're playing to maybe the best combined set of strengths of the two players, but you're actually playing to what might be the weaker element of Roquan's game, and he's making a sacrifice for another player. So it's an unfortunate situation, but you know, we won't lose sight of Roquan's value, and I'm pretty sure he's gonna move on to be all pro this year, given the way he's playing right now. Let's go another one. I got a question about the onside kick here. This is from Brett Hammonds at Ravens Dad 1985, says, any analysis of the onside kick unit? Do you think teams are targeting Zay? And do you think there is someone else on the roster who could do that job better?
Go ahead. You start us off. I was going to say, as far as the targeting Zay thing, I mean, that might be the case, you know, given that, you know, it's a rookie and, hey, we saw him give up one against Dallas. Maybe that's the one we can lean more to again. He might, you know, just might be something he's not accustomed to doing. I'm not sure how many hands Team Zay's been on since he's been in playing Pop Warner football. But, you know, usually it was a great bounce of a ball, and usually bouncing the ball over the head of one of the shorter receivers is the way to go. That's why when it comes to hands teams, I'd much prefer a guy like Isaiah Likely or one of the bigger tight ends be in that spot. So in case there is a big bounce, that guy can just high point the ball, bring it down, and bada bing, bada boom. There's no worry about that. But when you have a smaller statured receiver and you get in those occasions you do get that good bounce, you know, there's a chance they can bounce right over his head. Even if, you know, Zay's a guy with hops, but you know, usually when guys are expecting onside kick, they're expecting a dribbling ball sometimes, not necessarily the good bouncing ball. So I think having the tight ends, like especially a guy like Likely or even Andrews or Kolar as that kind of up guy to kind of wait for that either a ricochet or just, you know, to field the ball a little bit better. I prefer a tight end in those situations. It's not like we got Brandon Bostic, man. We got three of the best tight ends in the league playing for us. So I'd rather see a tight end in that spot than an undersized receiver.
Yeah, and that maybe goes to the targeting question. I think they probably are targeting him in part due to size, and also in part due to what they saw against Dallas, that he had a hard time covering a high English kick. But I think the player on the other side might be Aguilar, and I'm not 100% sure of that, but I believe Aguilar has taken that role for the Ravens in past years. Just having a taller guy, period, I think is an advantage. You know, yeah, tight end is reasonable. Aguilar is a perfectly good hands guy. The tight ends are often needed, along with linebackers, to be the very first line of defense. You know, you want to block and make sure that the guys are not taken out, because as soon as that ball hits the ground, it's a live ball. As soon as it's the ground and it goes 10 yards, it's a live ball. So you're allowed to destroy whoever is standing out there. So you need actual blockers to let that one guy make his play on the football. It really rarely comes down to a second. Flowers is not in a position on the one this week that he could make a fair catch or anything on the balls, because again, it was done in the traditional manner where it was second bounce is very high. It was just the perfect kick. That's all it comes down to. Yes, Flowers got beat on one at Dallas. It was the only onside kick that had been recovered the whole year. And yes, he got beat on a second here, but that anybody would have gotten beaten on that. I mean, the kick was of the perfect height, allowed the Tampa Bay player to come in and recover it perfectly. I just don't think there's anyone who would have been able to take that ball away from him. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe there's a big tight end who would have boxed out and been the guy on that. But I'm not even sure in that case that would have worked.
Yeah, hopefully it doesn't come up again.
I'll go for that too. Though, you know, honestly, if the other team is making onside kicks against you, there's worse positions to be in a football game. That usually means you have a lead.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go to AngeLove85, who says, "Hey Ken, any thoughts on why the pass rush had difficulty? At first, I thought safety was our biggest trade concern, but now I'm leaning towards edge/defensive end. Any targets you like? And whose snaps would be cut based on production?" Kind of a two-part question there. I'll leave the trade targets for you and whether or not where you'd place this on the top of your list. I'm just going to say I think some of the analysis from the defensive article is out there. I hope you can take a look at that, Nikki at Nikki622A. But I really believe it's less a case of the pressure that the Ravens are getting. The quality of pressure is reduced, but that's only about 10 to 15% of the problem relative to 2023. The major part of the problem is that they're not doing well with the opportunities they're giving away. So that's when they start with that, I say the target is still a safety. The target is still someone in the secondary. You could go out and get a corner if you needed to do that, but I really want a safety and not a defensive end. Do you tell me how you'd organize, maybe you prioritize edge and who you might go after if you did.
I think they already have too many mouths to fill at edge to go out and get somebody. They signed Yannick Ngakoue to the active roster for that reason, right? He's a guy that they brought in, and and brought some juice. Already has a sack under his belt, and they already have a guy in Adisa Isaac who's just collecting dust on the inactive list right now. So I don't think it's high on their list of things that they'd want to address via midseason trade, and because there's so many other teams the Lions and other, so you kind of be competing with for some of those edge rushers at the trade deadline. And then it's like a lot of those guys don't come cheap either. A lot of good names being floated around. There's Za'Darius Smith from Cleveland, and there's no way they trade him within the division, even if they feel like their season is lost. And a guy like Max Crosby would be way too expensive. Maybe a guy is on 1 year deal, like a Chase Young from New Orleans. I'm not sure how much of their he's on a 1 year deal, so there's nothing you can prorate. And I think they signed him for like 1 year, $13 million or something like that. And I'm not sure how much they'd be willing to eat. And he hasn't exactly been gangbusters either. So, there's supply and demand, and you already have a surplus on your roster already. So, I doubt that they'd make a move. If they're gonna make a move at anything, it definitely probably be at safety. And we've already gotten into that, the first show.
All right. Hey, how about a move at corner? Some people have suggested that.
I mean, if you wanted some more depth, I mean, they're pretty stout as far as the top three guys. There's nobody who you could bring off the street who would start over any of their top three guys right now. If you want some additional depth, there might be some guys that can be had out there just because you want some insurance in case Humphrey does miss any amount of time or anything like that as far as the back end of the roster. But I don't see them giving up any assets for a corner. I think there's still some guys out there that they could pick off for a practice squad or two. But I think they like the guys in house via both the practice squad and already on their roster.
Let me give you one name that'll ring a bell with a lot of Baltimore fans. He's now almost 32 years old. But any reason why you would try and kick the tires on Marcus Peters?
Thinking about MP Jukeman the other day. I was just thinking about him the other day. I was like, what's Marcus Peters up to these days? And, he's a guy that already familiar with the system. He'll definitely be, ring chasing as far as, wouldn't command any kind of crazy salary or anything like that. He'd be a guy that familiar with the system, familiar with the culture. I would mind adding him for a vet men deal as a veteran mercenary, to round out the quarterback roster heading into the postseason or whatever.
Yeah, it would be an interesting move. I think I'd be for it. And one of the things that it would allow you to do is potentially accelerate a move of Marlon Humphrey to safety. Now, Marlon Humphrey is awfully valuable where he is, but what have we seen? Like the consistency in his picks the last couple of years is that he comes off his own receiver like nobody else to go to somebody else's receiver and make a pick. Exactly what he did on the first interception. The second interception, it was a contested interception with Wiggins. So, they were both kind of getting to the spot at the same time. When I see that, I say he's going to be a great safety in the NFL. It's just a matter of when. So Marcus Peters is not a guy who can cover anybody at this point, but he's a fantastic eyes in the backfield cover three back end corner. And that's been always what he was really good at. Would you worry about him being toasted by opposing wide receivers? Do you think he would throw any kind of a dark cloud over that corner of the field that opposing cornerbacks be very leery of throwing into? I mean, Marcus Peters is still one of the great interceptors in the history of the National Football League. Would you take a chance on him just to play some very specific role? And where would you be on that?
I mean, at this point, it'd be deaf because like, he'd be deaf exclusively just now that you have Mallette back. Because even if you wanted to transition Marlon to more of a safety role, first man up at slot corner would be Mallette, and then Ardarius, and then you still want to have – they still want to start Nick Wakens over Peters, and they still want to start Brandon Stevens over Peters. So if anything, he'd just be quality depth at this point. It'd just be somebody you trust more than a T.J. Tampa who's barely played. So I'd be fine with it.
How about the possibility of having Marcus Peters come in and play safety? Trick question.
No, I'm good on that one. Not all ball hawks are created equally as far as being able to transition and we saw that with Darrell Revis, Chan Bailey, some of the greats tried to make their transition and it just didn't work out, man.
Yeah, no, it's I think that's true. For him in particular, I never really saw it as a reasonable transition. I did thought, boy, it would be great to have his ball hawking skills on the back end, but he's really a cover three corner only at this point. I'd kind of love to see it, but it's probably not going to happen. All right, let me see what else we got. This is from today, Tyler Gross, Crazy Raven 88. He's been on the show before. Tyler, how you doing? Says, random thought, but is there any concern in Hamilton's drop in his dominance, however slight, this year? We've seen safeties who excel playing around the line of scrimmage have their best years early and trend down, like Jamal Adams and Derwin James.
No, I'm not concerned about Kyle Hamilton. Kyle Hamilton is so far down on the totem pole of problems in the Ravens defense, you might as well be underground. He's not the safety with the issue. Okay. The people you should be more worried about are the guys that play mainly in the deep middle, who have problems covering deep middle. Kyle Hamilton does everything he's asked to do at a very high level. The guy doesn't miss tackles. He lays the wood. I mean, even on some of the times he is playing deep, I mean, he's the guy that closes on. It's by the, I don't know how Cade Otton and Terry McLaurin have all their marbles. It's in back to back weeks that Kyle Hamilton's laid those dudes out on near the sideline or up in the air on big hits like that, and they're clean hits too. I remember when he first laid that big hit on Cade Otton, they were calling for him for a foul, and then they replayed the thing all shoulder. The dude is all shoulder, all business, all the time. So no, Kyle Hamilton is the furthest from issue. He's not having a down year or a dip in dominance. It's people around him who are letting him down and failing the system as a whole. They're the ones that are compromising the integrity of the Ravens pass coverage, not Kyle Hamilton.
Yeah, I completely agree. And you know, there were concerns about Roquan earlier this year, but I think the two of them are both now back on track to get significant postseason honors, whether it's the Pro Bowl only or even all pro. I don't think either of them is in a place where they're going to win the defensive player of the year this year, but they're both very good football players. And they're really the keys to the Ravens defense. You know, Roquan remains the signal caller. If anything were to happen to him, Kyle is it. He's critically important to this team wherever he plays. And you know that because they're constantly trying to put him in the most significant position closest to the line of scrimmage.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Okay. Here's one. And this is kind of difficult. I have a trouble getting to people on Reddit because they, when they put hashtag film study mailbag on this, I can't see it on a tweet deck here, but Bufudu says, I'm torn because on one hand, teams down big have to gamble with more aggressive throws that can pay off big. On the other hand, the Ravens know it's coming. How do they reconcile this? I guess they're saying in terms of what chances you take defensively late in the game when there's a team coming back. So I'm going to simplify the question a little bit and say, is the prevent defense, is there another version of prevent defense that is better at preventing teams from coming back?
I mean, no, we're not reinventing the wheel here. The Ravens are just trying not to get beat deep, you know, give up anything quick. It's just that you're still giving up chunk plays at a high clip, right? So, like, even if you're keeping things in front of you, you're not necessarily still, like, like you're still not stopping them at a fast enough rate. Now the Ravens' offense has transitioned to the point where they're not taking their foot off the gas anymore. They've learned their lesson, you know. So now they're at the, I'm not saying they're just running up scores, but they know how much and when to let up. Like I said in this game, they know when to put Josh Johnson in a game. They know when, like, hey, look, we're up 17 points with how many minutes left? Yeah, they're not coming back. You know, so I definitely think that, you know, like, I don't want them to get too aggressive, because I feel like Zach were kind of panicked a little bit in that Cowboys game, and he was trying to dial some blitzes, and Dak was kind of picking them apart and getting them over top. So I definitely think you don't want to get too aggressive. Just keep things in front of you and don't make it too easy. You know, it's like teams will get desperate when they get down. You know, you just can't lose your composure either.
Yeah, I think one of the things you can do is send an occasional blitzer, and you don't have to do it every time. You don't have to do it consistently. Most of what you're trying to do is get inbounds tackles made, but that doesn't mean you couldn't do what the Ravens did. And one out of 25 plays or whatever it was in the fourth quarter that they ran, or 28 plays, they sent Ardarius Washington and he got a sack. I think it's extremely difficult for the team to adjust to, because basically they have to be using a one back set to try and pick that free rusher off, or they have to usually get rid of it down. And, you know, as a defense, you do really have to seek out variance in some way, or accept a bunch of short plays where they're running the clock out on themselves. I don't think that the NFL has found the perfect way to play prevent defense. And I also think it's because it's true in most sports that the balance of strategies favor the trailing team. And most sports embrace this as a way to make the sport more exciting. So football, one example is the onside kick. It's only made for the trailing team. The lead team has no benefit from onside kicks, and generally speaking, they don't even allow surprise onside kicks anymore. The only sport where you have a designated role for the winner is the closer in baseball. In basketball, you have the whole system of fouls. And the one-on-one in college, they still have the one-on-one in pro at any level, or is it always two shots? I don't even know. I mean, you're non-shooting fouls, but then when you get to shooting fouls, are they always two shots?
Yeah.
Okay.
Unless you make one, then it's an and one.
Right, of course. Okay, so for and one. Or you can get three, I understand. But I was wondering if there's anything like in college where for those three fouls in a row, you get a one-on-one, which is just an enormous, you know, benefit to foul. So it's another strategy which favors the trailing team. And it's something they embrace to try and to try and make the sport more exciting. Football has that too. So basically the trailing team trades a risk of turnovers for additional yards and points, and they're generally more and more effective at doing that with better quarterbacks. And it's also harder when you want to play off coverage to disguise what you're doing in terms of blitzes. So some of the tools you have in the bag are taken away from you. So anyway, is there a better way to play prevent defense? I don't really know at this point. And it may be something that would require a rule change at some point if they want to bring defenses back to some prominence. And I don't think there's absolutely any appetite in the NFL or even its fan base to do that right now.
No, this is the offensive league we're living in. We just got to accept it.
All right. Got one more here. This is from Alvin Cash. He says, "Hey Ken, longtime listener, just want to drop a note and saying how much I enjoy the show. I listened to all of it, short, long, everything. Thanks for all the hard work." Well, thanks, Al. Always nice to hear. Appreciate all you folks. If you don't mind, drop us a 50-word, 5-star review on your favorite podcast platform. That's one thing you can do for us that has low cost. Another thing, show it to a friend of yours who maybe doesn't know. We did have the question come from Isaiah. I want to credit Stogie Yogi for actually suggesting Marcus Peters here. Could he be comebacking as a safety? So I appreciate that. And I think that's all we're going to have time for tonight on the mailbag. Great questions. You see how much time and thought people put into the questions on here. They're not just silly things about who should I activate on my fantasy team and things like that. These are really well thought out schematic questions from these people.
Yeah, you got some real highly intelligent listeners out there, Ken. I mean, most people that read your enjoy your work, I can't help but learn when you do. I know that's how I found you. I found you originally was just kind of I was looking for somebody who really got into the granular nitty gritty of film studying, breaking stuff down, and so your readers appreciate you. Your readers, I'm over here like here, right? You get some readers too, but yeah, your listeners and your followers definitely appreciate everything that you do, and you make the smart with your analysis.
Okay, well, I appreciate that, Josh. Always love talking football with you. Thanks for making the time for this. I know it's often difficult for us to get on the air. We're recording this at now 4:24 in the morning because Josh has young kids. He has five kids now. Five kids and two newborn twins.
I got two twin girls, man. Yeah.
I mean, just are they identical, by the way?
Oh, fraternal, thankfully. If they were identical, I start color coding these things, man.
Here, let me have your hand. You're blue and you're pink today.
Yeah. Like green, come here, green. Come here. Leave red alone.
All right. Well, that's pretty cool. I know you and your wife have a very busy life there, but it's always fun when we can talk football. Tell folks where they can find your work or talk to you online.
Yeah, you can find all my Ravens content at BaltimoreBeatdown.com. And then, you know, of course, like I work for Anchorage Daily News up here in Anchorage, Alaska, where I was born and raised and live for the time being. But yeah, I can be found on Twitter at JoshReed907.
All right. Other folks out there, if you'd like to be on a film study short, hit me up. I'm always interested in talking to new people about football. This is how I meet the new people who end up being on the offensive and defensive shows. I have other ways to meet them too, but this is a primary way is by doing a short with you. And oftentimes, not too often, but sometimes people will approach me about doing an offensive or defensive show. I do have a requirement. You do at least one short first, so I know what I'm getting myself into. Absolutely. Love to have you on for that kind of show. But otherwise, thanks very much for all the loyal listeners. And Josh, thanks again for coming on.
Thanks for having me, Ken.
We'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. And instead, simply go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI on Unlimited Ultimate and a watch or tab, also on them.
Service plan required for watch or tab. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
Access big savings every day, all in the Kroger app. Get tender Heritage Farm boneless chicken breast for $2.49 a pound. Then find low prices on thousands of items like sparkling ice water, Kroger brand chips, and more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.